technical experts, etc. Now, in the opening and welcome, one is at liberty to raise any number of issues as chair, either congratulating people or commiserating with them and so on. But, you know, I am aware that some journalists have given the profession, will have diluted the reputation of the profession. Nevertheless, there was a journalist who served this committee from, you know, with all her other work, who has now retired, and I think that one would like to wish her well, and that is Linda Ensor. Some of you may be aware of the name. You know, she served, she was very committed, and unlike some journalists I've come across, and I'll give you one example, I was once in a pub and I heard someone saying, "Yes, I'm knee deep in snow." I thought, what? How can you be, you know, we're here. I looked across, freezing, a lot of cars on the side here, you know, engines have ceased, etc., etc. To cut a long story short, he was paid to go and cover this ice or snow in the Drakensberg and, you know, the damage it had done, and he did it from the warm environment of the pub. And so, yes, you've always had some journalists who really lack integrity, and then others who have a strong dose of integrity, and if I may say, they do attempt to be objective, etc., etc. So having said that, I think that all members in the committee would want us to wish her well now in her retirement, and I believe she's swanning around in Japan as I talk, probably having some tea somewhere. But we do wish her well. Honourable MacPherson?
Thanks, Chair. I'd like to concur with your sentiments expressed to Linda Ensor. I think that she is a fine journalist who was never afraid to ask the tough questions. I think that this committee and Parliament will really miss her. I have, in fact, spoken to her since she announced her retirement, and she said it is only for a short period, in fact, and she will be reincarnating herself in another guise, still in the journalism profession. But I think maybe it would be appropriate for this committee to write a letter to her on behalf of all of us and wishing her well for her future endeavours.
Thank you. I'm glad we all share the same sentiments in that regard. Members, if we can please turn to the agenda. There are some changes I would like to make before we adopt the agenda. We won't be having the formal consideration of the BRRR today. I think Mr. Hermans is factoring in what day here? The Tuesday, the 23rd. We want to have a very clean BRRR because, as I said to you, we are really contextualizing this within 5-year term with both its limitations of a 15-month process, but plus, not simply its limitations, its advantages, which give us a broader view and understanding of what the department was like when this term began and where we are now, and the lessons learned during that process. So we want to do justice to this report, right? So that's been coming off. In its place, I would like to deal with some committee business that remains outstanding and just address that particular matter. That's why I was looking to see how many of us are here. It's 2, 4, 6. And I understood, Honourable Tia, you know, I know I should be using your new surname, but maybe you would write it down for me because I'm better at pronouncing things when I see it written down. But Honourable Tierka, just checking on yourself, because I know you have another committee as well. Will you be here till 12:30 in this committee?
Chair, today I'm here. It's Tuesday for trade and industry, Wednesday is for labour. I'm okay today.
You know, you're very committed to the other portfolio committee as well. Well, we do have some apologies, and allow me to submit the whip's apology immediately. He's, in a sense, on compassionate leave. His son is undergoing surgery, so he is with his son at the hospital. And he hopes to be back tomorrow, but let us see. What are the other apologies you have, Mr. Hermans?
Chair, the other apologies is Ms. Langweni, party business, Mr. Esterhazer, who is attending PC on Energy, and Edward Alberts, who is a medical. He's not feeling well.
We also have an apology from the Honourable Mantash, who is also on party business. And I'm happy to say we have the right processes and documents submitted to us. Honourable Matlobo?
Well, thanks, Chair. Probably on the apology for the whip, we'll probably convey our message of speedy recovery to his son and the procedure to go well on behalf of ourselves as a committee. Thank you.
Yes, I think that would be very important. He was quite distressed on the phone and concerned. So I assured him we are there with him in spirit, and we will convey that to him, Mr. Hermans. Huh? Thank you. I don't have any other apologies. No. So it is now about 15:15. I see this doesn't have a clock in here, does it? No. Rely on mine. It's probably 10:18, and we then go consideration of the input from the technical experts. Yes, quite right. Can I have some? No, we see Mr. Williams, Honourable Williams is wide awake. Can you please, yeah.
Chairperson, I propose the adoption of the agenda with the amendment of the consideration of BRRR happening next week. Thank you.
And in its place, committee business. Thank you. Can we have that seconded, please? Thanks, Honourable Tierko. Right. Mr. Hermans. This could cause some confusion. Two bills were distributed this morning. And did you not get it? The one that is correct says number of copies printed 800. That is the one you should be following. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. Now with the adopted agenda, we would like to welcome the experts. Can I just see the list of names here. I don't remember them offhand. The experts.
No, the experts is not here. You just speak to the experts.
Oh, right. So the experts aren't here, but yes, exactly. No, members, you're quite right. Let's just proceed on that basis. There are the Office of the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission have submitted an apology, right? That's Advocate Foller and Advocate Petchy. Then we have Advocate Johan Strydom, who is also coming in from time to time, has submitted his apology. But who do we have here from DTI? The DDG, Dr. Masocha. DDG CCRD, Dr. Nonyana Mokabane, right, thank you, Chief Director, Legal Drafting, and Ms. Mabaso Mavungo, Mavango, Director, Legal Drafting, CCRD. Ms. Padiachi, Deputy Director Policy, CCRD. Mr. Makonza, Administrator of CCRD. For Parliament and ourselves, the Constitutional and Legal Services of Parliament, we have Advocate van der Merwe, who's the Senior Parliamentary Legal Advisor in drafting. We are also very happy to welcome and acknowledge Advocate Huan, the Senior State Law Advisor. I did see him at one point. Yes, Advocate van der Merwe?
He requested that I just tender an apology for him. As I will explain when I present, him and Advocate Stridom are working on an opinion regarding constitutionality of the bill. So he came in to speak to Advocate Stridom, but then left because Advocate Stridom wasn't coming immediately.
No, thank you. That explains it all. And we're not dealing with the BRRR, so we just leave that one off. So everyone here is acknowledged. The table staff, Ms. Naidu, Parliamentary Legal Liaison Officer. So please, can we move ahead then? Advocate van der Merwe, you're going to take us through.
Thank you, Chair. If I may maybe just start by explaining to members what we did with the technical panel's inputs. We received inputs from four persons. Advocate Myberg, from Ms. Woods from WIPO, and Ms. Ngubo, and Mr. Baloy. And what we did with their comments, when the request was sent out, the committee will remember that this was a technical panel. That was the reason why it was called technical. And what the committee wanted from this panel was that we did not want to fall into the trap that when this bill came to Parliament, there were all these words used incorrectly in the bill. We wanted to make sure that the terminology that is now in the bill is in fact the correct terminology. The committee has dealt with policy decisions. Whether we are doing fair use, fair dealing, or a hybrid, that decision has been taken. It is done. So we requested the technical panel specifically to not venture into the area of policy, to focus on the terminology used in the bill, to focus on whether the terminology is aligned to the treaties, if there's a constitutionality concern, to raise that, because that is an important thing to always look at. The panel members expressed the concern that it was very difficult for them to comment on terminology without referring to policy. So most of their inputs did go broader than simply focusing on the terminology. Some of their inputs focused on the treaty and whether the bill is aligned with the treaty, and some of them were plain technical concerns. So as a team, what we did was to take each of those comments, we considered them clause by clause, every person's comments, even those that dealt with policy, because of the criticism that it was difficult to divorce the wording from the policy. But what we've then done is we've come up with this draft, and this draft is then where we have looked at the comments from the technical panel regarding compliance with the treaty, constitutionality, where the wording affected policy. We considered that. I mean, in other words, if the wording is giving effect to the policy adopted by the committee, and that is what we are presenting today. So we're not going to go through the four documents themselves. It is a very hefty task to do so. And as I say, a lot of it is ventures around policy. The one thing that we're not going to touch on today is the issue of constitutionality. There was a concern raised on a couple of issues. And we are having two sets of advisors prepared for the committee on that. In respect of the one, whether our hybrid model, the fair use, fair dealing model that we have in the bill, complies with the three-step test of the treaties. That was raised under constitutionality and also in general in respect of compliance with the treaty. Professor Sean Letter, the committee will remember, is one of the experts that were assisting this committee, but then his business got quite busy. He was taking over some lectures for other professors, and it became very difficult for him to attend the committee. But we got in touch with him, and he has undertaken to prepare an advice for the committee on this. His initial comment is that there are, in fact, a number of well-respected scholars that have written on fair use and three-step. And whereas there are people who are concerned that fair use can never comply with the three-step test, he is saying that there are a number of well-respected scholars that say that this is not the case. And that is the advice that he is preparing for this committee, so that this committee can be satisfied that what is in the bill is in fact compliant with the treaty. So we are just waiting for that advice from him. And then, as I've indicated now with the apologies, Advocate Stratum and Advocate Wynne are looking at the other constitutional concerns. I have looked at it quite at a high level. I am of the view that there's no constitutional concerns. The one constitutional concern has already been discussed with the committee, and that is the concern on the retrospectivity where we are dealing with the sharing of royalties. And the concern was that the procedure is so uncertain that we cannot say that it is procedurally fair. So what is currently in the bill is that the minister will have to go and see where this can actually be applied, and it will in others become a little bit more of a limited scope, but there will be specific procedures that can be put in place and that will be fair. So that is how we have dealt with that. The other issues, I would ask the committee to grant me that I rather speak to it when we have the opinion also from the department, so that we don't do it twice. Then what I will do is I will take the committee through the bill and speak to the things that we have changed. Some of these are really just technical saying, but you know, the bill doesn't provide for this, you should rather word it like that, and I will go quickly through those, but where there is something that was quite significant, I will bring that up. I see my screen is going on and off. I will try and keep an eye on it and make sure that my connection is fine. If we go to page 2 of the bill, the long title, the type of comments that we received here was simply whether the long title is every sentence therein correctly captures what is in the bill. So the changes that we have made here is to make sure that the long title correctly captures what is in the bill. So it is quite technical, and I think it does add to the bill. It makes the bill, the long title, very clear as to what is in the bill. So I'm not going to go through each of those amendments. I think they are all would be the same. The first aspect that I would like to discuss is on page 3, and that is the definition of collecting society. Yeah. We have already discussed this in the previous meeting because this is one of the clauses that will be advertised. It was both input from the technical panel as well as from the public who commented on the offences clause that we need a definition for collecting society. So we have now clearly brought in that the bill here, the proposal before you clearly brings in that it is a non-profit company, that it is subject to the Companies Act. In other words, all the requirements and obligations that rest on directors are made applicable to this company, that it must be owned by holders of rights, members must be holders of rights, and the members will have granted a mandate to license, manage, or represent, and this must be their primary purpose. So that is the definition that we are proposing for collecting society, but as I'm saying, it is also something that is advertised. The next aspect that I want to speak to is over on the next page, at the top there, commercial. Here Ms. Woods from WIPO indicated that the word direct in our definition excludes a lot of activities that could be commercial, but it's an indirect commercial. So what she proposes is that we remove the word direct, and then it simply becomes the obtaining of economic advantage, which means both direct and indirect. The next is the definition of person with a disability at the bottom of that page. What we had here is that we unfortunately had a circular definition. Professor Myberg pointed out we are referring to accessible format copy, which is defined. And if you look at the definition of accessible format copy, it refers to person with a disability. So you never get to the actual definition. You keep going in circles. So all that we have done is to explain what is the accessible format copy that the person will require. In other words, requires the work to be in a format that enables that person to access and use the work in the same manner as a person without disability. So we've just said it a bit broader. So to limit that. The next page that I want to talk to is on the next amendment that we propose is on page 6 in clause 3. What we have here, Mr. Baloyi indicated that if we take out the word such, now such is currently in the Act, and the bill is introduced, proposed that the word such be deleted and replaced with the word an. Now what he says is if you read it like this, it causes a discrepancy for him. He was not happy with the way that it's phrased. He says it might create uncertainty as to whether your reference as may be prescribed is in reference to every work or to the organizations. And he proposed that we retain the word such and delete the word an. Now, if that makes it clearer, then that is the way to go. I don't see that there was any concern, really, with the word such. So it now would read that every copyright shall be conferred by the section on every work which is eligible for copyright and which is made by or under the direction or control of the state or such international or local organization as may be prescribed. It does link may be prescribed very, very clearly to it. So it does make sense. That proposal does make sense. The next is at the bottom of that page, and this is Ms. Woods indicated that although we are now adding the communication rights, communicating the word or making it available to the public by wire or wireless means, what the bill does not do is to provide for distribution and rental rights. This is also one of the clauses that's being advertised at the moment, so we have discussed it before. And what we're doing here in paragraph E, capital C, is to just add, in relation to section 6, distributing the original or a copy of that work to the public. The next is on the next amendment, proposed amendment on the next page, and this is in relation to the sharing of royalties. The concern that was raised that it is not clear whether an author could actually waive this right to share in royalties. And the committee will remember there was a lot of criticism about contractual freedom, etc., and it was not the intention for this right to be absolute and something that cannot be waived. So what we are proposing is to make it very clear that the author shall, subject to any agreement to the contrary, be entitled to receive a fair share of the royalty. So it makes it very clear that there is a right to share, have a fair share, but that your agreement can read differently. On the next subsection, this was a proposal from Mr. Baloyi, and he was saying that it just makes it a bit more clear who the agreement will be between. So he would like to repeat the words between the author and the person. That is quite clear that it's always the author on the one side of the contract and either the copyright owner or the person who has a license on the other. Both of these are amendments that do make sense, and that is why we are then in fact proposing it. The next amendment starts at the bottom of this page and goes over on the next, and all of this is actually a technical correction, because as Mr. Baloyi pointed out, when we refer to subsection 2B, subsection 2B refers to a refers to a use and not to a person. So what he was saying is we need to say, if we say contemplated, we can't say the person contemplated. We need to say the person authorized to use the work as contemplated in section 2B. And subsection 6 is the next. The concern here by Mr. Baloyi was, if you use the word commissioned in respect of literary or musical works, and this is now what this section does not apply to, if you keep the word commission here, you create an anomaly, because actually the Copyright Act does not provide for literary or musical works to be commissioned. So if your act doesn't provide for it to be commissioned, you can't exclude commissioned works. So it is an anomaly, and it does make sense what he is saying. The intention was good, but the Act does not provide for commissioned work in this regard, and therefore it is not something that can be excluded as such. The next is on page 9 of the bill, and it's again the issue of distributing rights, and in this time it is in relation to Section 7. So I won't spend too much time on it. It's the same concern that the treaties provide for distribution and rental rights, and this clause does not have it. In paragraph B there, the DC is just a consequential amendment. On the next amendment is on page 11. The concern that was expressed here, this is in subsection 4 there on page 11. Ms. Woods indicated that when we look, and it is both A, paragraphs A and B, what Ms. Woods indicated is that if we look at the Berne Convention, it refers to the legislation of the country to which the author belongs, not to which the author is a citizen of, belongs. And she says the same is in the Stockholm and Paris Acts of 1967 and 71, and in there it was actually broadened to cover your habitual residence as well, which then in our legal language will translate to domiciled in. So that is the proposal to add there. The next amendment is still in subsection 4 in paragraph D, the changing of the reference there, and that is just to correct the cross-reference. It should not be section 9, it should be section 7 of the Copyright Amendment Act. Subsection 5 is proposed to be deleted. Advocate Myberg indicated that with the resale right, royalty right, because it is not a copyright right, it is a different type of right, this subsection is irrelevant. It is not, you will never be, the resale royalty does not relate to the copyright that you have. It is about being the author. And because that then becomes irrelevant, we are proposing that be deleted. The next amendment is on page 13 of the bill at the bottom, and this is again the inclusion of the distribution rights. And in respect of this clause, over on the next page, it is also the inclusion of rental rights because provision hasn't been made for it. So this is also one of the clauses that are being advertised. So I won't say too much on that for now. The next amendment that is quite a big amendment is on page 15. And what we have done here is in relation to audiovisual rights. Committee members will remember that when the bill was introduced, the bill has introduced itself in respect of royalties on sound recordings, actually brought in a whole lengthy process of when a person wants to use the work, you need to enter an agreement. And it was agreed, the public was concerned about the lengthy process, and the department's proposal was then accepted by the committee, where we have a recordal of the work that was used, and we... it seems to be okay now. This is on page 15 of the bill. This is clause 9. Clause 9 on page 15 of the bill, subsection 6.
Subsection 6.
So what we've then brought in is that a person who uses the work must register the fact of usage and must submit a true and accurate report to the relevant person calculate the necessary royalties payable. What this is doing is this insertion here, and this is also one of the aspects that's being advertised, is to also make this applicable to audiovisual works, because the other type of work where we have a similar problem as the sound recording is audiovisual. And accordingly, this brings that exact same process into play, but in relation to audiovisual works. So that is what this subsection is trying to achieve. And that whole proposed amendment goes on over to page 16, up to the top there. Then the next amendment is in section 9. It is clause 10, section 9. And the first amendment there in paragraph E is just an oversight that the number of the paragraph was not put in. The next amendment in paragraph B, all the technical panels indicated that the rights covered by items 1 to 3 are in fact covered by Article 12 of the Rome Convention and Article 15 of the WPPT and may thus be made subject to may be the subject of non-voluntary licenses. But the right of interactive communication, which is in this paragraph F that we're proposing to delete here, is in fact an exclusive right, and it doesn't belong in this subsection. So the proposal is to just delete it. It was something that was put in, it was not in the bill as introduced, it was put in afterwards, and the proposal is just to take it out again. So how it would read is to, actually I would like to maybe just refer to the Act so that we have the full sentence. When we look at section 9, it says copyright in a sound recording vests the exclusive right to do or to authorize the doing of any of the following acts in the Republic. And then F would have read, making the sound recording available to the public by wire or wireless means so that any member of the public may access the sound recording from a place and at a time chosen by that person. So what they are saying about this is that if you look at the other rights granted under Section 9, those rights are making the making directly or indirectly a record which embodies the sound recording, letting or offering for hire or broadcasting the sound recording, causing it to be transmitted and communicating it to the public. They are saying that these are the type of rights that you would expect to see in this clause and not the the one in F. And therefore, the proposal from a technical panel, all the members propose that this be deleted. The next two paragraphs would then be the rights of distribution and of rental, which is also being advertised. The next amendment is in clause 11, and what we are amending here is Mr. Palloy was saying it is inconceivable that the law would contemplate making an authorization such as what is contemplated here to such an extent that it's necessary to insert the words or unless authorized by law. And he was also concerned that it would be in conflict with Article 15 of WPPT, which introduces a positive right of remuneration in this regard. So he proposed that we delete that phrase, and it seems to be correct. Then, if we go a little bit down to subparagraph 4, the concern here, again, of all the technical panel members is exactly the same as what we have looked at above about this being the subject of non-voluntary licenses, but that this phrase itself is an exclusive right that is granted, and therefore it does not fit in this, and the proposal was to rather delete it. The other amendments in this clause are then consequential to the deletion of subparagraph 4. The next amendment is on the next page, page 17. We are still in clause 11 on section 9A. We are now in subsection 2A. And again, the concern here is in relation to the sharing of royalty and the fact that there is contractual freedom, that the intention is not to set an absolute right. So the clarity that is brought in is just to say, subject to an agreement to the contrary. So page 17, we're still in clause 11, and it is subsection 2, paragraph A, to just make clear that there is an agreement. An agreement can alter that. The next amendment is on page 18, and it is in clause 13 at the bottom of that page. The concern was that if you include the words, the performance of the work, you are actually using terminology that appears in the Performance Protection Act and that it does not fit in this act. It should rather be the use of the work, and that is what the Copyright Act should limit itself to. So the proposal from Asgard Meinberg was to delete that phrase, and we've agreed with that and proposed thus to the committee that that be deleted. The on page 19 is the next amendment, and this is now at the bottom there. We are in clause 13, and this is section 12A, and it is the paragraph 1C. The proposal there is that, also from Advocate Meiberg, he was saying that there's no basis for removing moral rights of authors if you are looking at fair use by qualifying to the extent reasonably and practically possible. In other words, what he is saying, you need to give the person's name. You need to state, you know, you need to at least acknowledge the moral rights of the person if you are using their work without paying it. And it does make sense there. The next amendment is on page 20 of the bill. We are now in section 12B, and I'm referring you to paragraph D. And it's the same concern, the fact that you need to have the name and the source of the author. And this actually came from Ms. Woods, where she was saying it is suggested that you make it clear that at least your source and the name of the author must be included when you use the work. The next amendment on page 21 is a very small amendment. It is subsection 2, and we are just correcting the reference there to I, because it was J, and there is no longer a subsection 1J. It ends at I. So it was really just to correct that cross-referencing. To on page 22,
at the bottom of that page 21,
Chair, at the bottom of the page is not really at, yeah, it is the fourth line, fourth row from the bottom.
That's
it reads subsection 2 for J, the purposes of subsection 1
right.
I.
Okay.
The next amendment is a technical amendment. It's on page 22 in section 12C. It is the deletion of the subsection 1. There's only one subsection, and then it is the convention is not to actually mention the actual subsection there. The next amendment after this is then on page 24 of the bill, and again it is a correction of a cross-reference on page 24 of the bill in subsection 8. It is to correct the reference from 5 to 6, just to correct that cross-reference. The next amendment, Chair, is then on page 27, and there in subsection 9. This is a concern from Ms. Woods. She was saying that the compatibility of this provision with your three-step test in your international conventions is difficult to assess. She says, on the one hand, your provision does not allow for any use of the copies, but it doesn't describe or limit your purposes that it may be used for. So what she proposes is that we indicate that the purpose of this exception is that it is to make a copy for the own collection of the library. In other words, it's not just to make a copy for any person out there. The intention is that the copy is to be for their own collection. And it does make, that limitation does make sense. Then on subsection 11 there, she also expressed, she was saying that it's difficult for her to reconcile the permission granted under this subsection to use copies for any other legal purpose. She said it did not make sense to her, and what she would propose is that we make it very clear that it is for preservation purposes. And then because you use the word preservation in your sentence in the beginning, you change it at the bottom, the preservation, to scholarship, because that is the kind of intention that should be there. And that argument of hers also does make sense. So
11 here. So
subsection 11.
Right. You're saying it should be for scholarship. That's the proposal.
Yes. So in other words, it is for preservation purposes, and then they may make it available for scholarship, research, and other legal use. So in other words, her concern was that where we end there, or any other legal use, that is so broad, because anything that's legal means that you can provide these copies for. But if it is reproduction for preservation purposes, it limits the usage that you can make the work available for, because it is the key then is that when you reproduce, it must be for the purposes to preserve, not just to allow a person to, for instance, read up on something, and reading is a legal activity. So it could become so broad. So the proposal was at least make the reproduction subject to preservation purposes, and then you make it clear that they can make the work available for scholarship, research, or a legal other use that would still be legal, because your purpose is limiting the exception.
Advocate van der Merwe, does this cover the issue raised in respect of what occurs in libraries? We were told is, whatever the reason, students going in will often tear out a page of a particular reference book. The book's not allowed out, and it's torn out. It's not immediately noticed, as it would not be, until the next person takes out the reference book. And then that one page in a 500-page book or whatever is missing. And what libraries, she said, do is they get from another library just the copy of that page to put back into the book. Would that, essentially you're preserving, at the same time you're making it available for scholarship. Would that cover that example we were given?
Subsection 11 makes it clear that it is a work that has been retracted or withdrawn from public access. So if the work is still available, subsection 11 would not necessarily cover that, but I'm quite sure that one of the other sections, because we did give other subsections rather, would be able to give that kind of authority to libraries. So yes, 12A would definitely provide for that. And in fact, further also the subsection 13, which says a library may supply to another library, something like that. So there is definitely provision for that. Chair, the next amendment is also just a technical amendment. It is in subsection 15. The bill as introduced did not repeal section 12. It is now being repealed by the bill, because we have redrafted some of the clauses. So we should not be referring to section 12 anymore in our bill, and therefore the proposal is just to delete the section 12 and 12A, so that it is just clear the cross-reference there. The next amendment, Chair, is then on page 29, the next page. This one was quite an interesting one. A number of the technical presenters, and even from the members of the public, during one of the first rounds of comments, expressed concerns, and what we're dealing with here is general exceptions regarding the protection of copyright for persons with a disability. So In other words, a person who has a disability, there should be this exception for them. And what we've allowed is that any person or organization that serves a person with disabilities may make an accessible format copy. The concern that was expressed is any person is quite broad. How will we know? You know, a person might say, I serve a person with disabilities, and meanwhile they're making this accessible, like an audio copy, and distributing it to anyone. And the concern was raised that there should be some authorization or accreditation or something given to these organizations. And we debated a bit what would be the best way to do this. If you do accreditation, you have the problem that you bring in a new process. So there has to be an application, and we'll have to provide for all of these things. What we are proposing in the end is that the minister must prescribe the persons who will be allowed to do this. In other words, it will be very clear to the public. If you're a person with a disability and you want to obtain, let's say, an audio copy of a book, and you are buying it from Charmaine van der Merwe, you will have a gazette that will tell you whether Charmaine van der Merwe is actually authorized to do so by the minister. And if I'm not, you will know that, well, I'm not allowed to sell you this copy. It will be an infringement of copyright if I do. So there will still be a call for organizations to submit their names, etc., but it will be a much more informal process where this can happen. And, of course, then it will be very clear and it will be published, and the whole public will know who the organizations are that may make these accessible format copies. So that is the proposal that we have there. In the same section, subsection 3, towards the bottom of the page, Mr. Ngubo proposed that we include the word legal. So in other words, that when you say, when you import from another country a legal copy of an accessible format copy. So in other words, just to make it very clear that we're not just talking here of something from that's pirated, but it must be a copy that is in fact complying with the laws of that country. So that was the proposal from his side. The next amendment, Chair, is on the next page, page 30, and it is clause 21 and subsection 2 there of section 20. Mr. Baloy was saying that the word complain of is confusing. What are we trying to say? What is this complain? Is this someone who gets on a soapbox in a square and starts complaining? And that is, of course, not the intention at all. It is that a person may institute action. And we thought, well, if it is not clear, then rather let's put it very clearly what is the thing. The author has the right to take legal action related to infringement of the provisions of this section. So it makes it very clear. The next amendment is on page 31 at the top, and it is just the proposal there, I think it was for more than one of the technical panel members, was that we add the word written before agreement so that you are quite sure that when you are looking at any agreement in relation to commissioning of works, it must be a written agreement.
Chair. Thank you. I'm not sure, I'm not a legal person, but I'm told there are some case law that agreements are not necessarily all the time written. There are those instances when agreements are subjected to a particular test, but they are not written. I'm not having a problem with this technical amendment, as long as it does not actually start to create an unintended exclusion. I wanted just to be a little bit sure whether this insertion of this word in our understanding of certain case law experiences, where does it put us? Thank you.
I recall there was quite a discussion on this area. It all seemed where people saying of another, well, he agreed to it, she agreed to it, and the person disputes having ever given this verbal agreement, but do carry on.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, in fact, that is why the proposal is to insert the word written, because if we don't insert the word written, then it could be a verbal agreement as well. And the problem, of course, with a verbal agreement, if you look at subsection 3, which then follows, it is quite an intricate process that we are putting out there, and we are saying, where you did not agree to this, then this will apply, where you agreed to that, then this will apply. So this is probably the kind of agreement that we do want the law to set a formality there, which is that it must be in writing. So that would be then. Also,
stop
the
there for a moment, because see the point that Honourable Ms. Lawball raised, but it was raised in that discussion in Mark's House, is unintended consequences. Would this perhaps lead to certain exclusion or whatever? And I think we all need to just apply our minds to this one. What is our intention here? Our intention is to protect the very people who lost their copyright because of a certain, sort of references to people having agreed verbally. Is that going to, if we say this and we go to certain urban areas, certain rural areas, we may find that then nothing is put in writing at all. But the intention we had here was to protect those who, retailers, wholesalers, and individuals had said they had got this through a verbal agreement and it's theirs now. But are these some of the unintended consequences? And I think it's an important point, Honourable Ms. Lawball.
Chairperson, you're correct. You know, an insertion of a word, it can change the whole context, like you're putting it. I would say we note the proposal, but that fundamental question you're asking for, let's be certain before we proceed, let's reflect. Because our understanding and why we're doing this intervention is that sometimes contractual law has been used in an exploitative way, where in certain instances people are exploited because, one, there were no written agreements entered into, but people's ability to perform or do all these other things were utilized, and people were able to get away with murder. That's why we've crafted this thing. Let's flag it and say that if we accept the proposed insertion, doesn't actually create unintended consequences. Also, in the light, why are we doing it, and who are these people that we have a direct interest to help them by this intervention through legislation, but also taking into account that there are certain case laws where a decision has been made by our courts where certain agreements were not written, but they did pass the rationality test, and then they were judged favorably to those that had entered into. That will be the request I will make. Let's flag it, and then until we have some degree of comfort.
We're not saying it may not eventually be there, but let's flag it and enable the different parties to just review it. Okay, so do proceed.
Thank you, Chair. If I may just be allowed to say one more thing on this. We are dealing, just so the members have the clear picture when you take this matter back, we are dealing here with commissioning work. If an act requires an agreement to be in writing and it is not, then there is regarded to be no agreement. So you cannot come later with a verbal agreement. So who will written agreement protect? It will protect the author. Because the person who commissions is the one who will want the agreement. Because remember, the law as it stands, if you create a work, you are the copyright owner. Mm-hmm. What happens with commissioned work is you create for me and I become the owner. So you are changing the normal application of the law. So by indicating that it must be a written agreement means that if there's no agreement, the creator will remain the author. The author will remain the copyright owner. So the person who will be prejudiced will be the person who commissions. And I think that would be your company, the person who's asking to take the photograph and so on. So if we keep that in mind, when you take it back, I have noted it as flagged.
Just with your permission, I think the explanation is okay, but let's not lose the point that going forward, there's a clear mechanism. How do we want to work? But then there's a history in between over a number of years that certain things have happened. Therefore, recognizing those injustices of the past, that's why I'm saying going forward, it will be much clearer. You'll do civic education. People will be aware to say, you know what, never again exploitation should happen in this industry. Therefore, this is how henceforth we are going to conduct ourselves. But for the redress purposes, let's flag it, because for the redress purposes, the conditions and circumstances might be a little bit different. Thank you.
Thank you. So, yes, it's not our intention to go flagging everything, and that's the very first thing we have flagged, an important issue. Let us proceed. Fine.
Thank you, Chair. The next proposed amendment is on page 32 of the bill. It is in clause 23. It is section 22 and it's subsection 3. Aspect Myberg pointed out to us that by inserting the phrase in a literary or musical work by an author to a publisher in the assignment of copyright, that we are actually removing the formalities for any work that is not literary or musical work. In other words, what this section said is that no assignment of copyright and no exclusive license to do an act which is subject to copyright shall have effect unless it is in writing and signed by or on behalf of the assignor. So in other words, there was a formality set for every assignment of copyright. And by limiting it to literary and musical work, we took that formality away for every other work. Why did we insert literary or musical work? Because if you look at the bottom of that subsection, you will see that this is where we're providing for an assignment to revert to the author after 25 years. And that is where we wanted to limit it to a literary or musical work. So in other words, assignments of other works can be perpetual, but when it comes to literary or musical works, the intention was for that to revert. So what we are proposing there is that we delete the phrase in a literary or musical work by an author and a publisher, that be deleted. So we retain the formality, but we make it clear that the reversion in respect of literary and musical works is after 25 years. Chair, the next amendment is on page 33. And what we have here is this section deals with licenses in respect of orphan works. Now, when we dealt with the resale royalty right, now you'll remember that the resale royalty right is where a person made a visual artistic work and sells it on, and that person then after 10 years sells it on to a gallery or something like that and makes millions on this work. And what we then provide for the resale royalty is that must then, there must be a percentage paid to the person who created the work, because I, as a painter, I painted a nice picture, put it in a gallery. The first time it sold for 1,000 rand, because I'm not famous. Then I get famous, and when it is resold, it now sells for 500,000. And then that must be a percentage come to me. But the concern that we had was, what if I became a little bit obscure because I don't like being famous, so I move to the mountains and I'm in a little cottage there and no one can find me? What do you do with that royalty that should be mine? And the principle is almost the same as orphan works. And that is why we slotted it in here in orphan works. But I think I apologize, Ms. Woods pointed out that if you bring it in here, you're actually causing confusion now. because resale royalty is not copyright. It's a different type of right. But we still wanted to make use of the search steps that is required for orphan works. So what we are proposing is that we delete the phrase or a resale royalty right in subsection 1, and we then, over on page... Let me first take you to page 35, because that is where we fixed that then, is where we then say, where the identity in subsection 10 on page 35, we're proposing within under orphan works, make specific provision for resale royalty, where we talk about the steps that are contemplated to identify and locate the author, because that is the part that we wanted this to be applicable to. So that is where we then put that. So it is maybe a small phrase that becomes now a big one, but it is because we're repeating the applicable subsections of this section. If I then can take members just back a bit to page 34, there's an amendment proposed there in subsection 8, and as it might have indicated that the bill has a loophole, because the way it was worded, the copyright owner, could actually claim from your user instead of the account. So keep in mind with orphan works, if you use the work, you can't find the author, you will then pay into a certain account those royalties, and the copyright owner can then come at any stage and claim that. But because we didn't say against whom the copyright owner can claim, it did leave it open. Who do you claim against? So what we're proposing here is that it is clear that you will recover those royalties from the account that it was paid into. In other words, the subsection 7 account, or if the licensee has not made payment to that account, then you can go directly to the licensee. So that just resolves and closes that loophole. So the next amendment then, I'm now going to skip 35, the top because we've dealt with it, but at the bottom of 35, now we're dealing with collecting societies. One of the things that I'm not, it comes up a number of times, but I'm not going to repeat it all the time, is that authors were left out in some instances. So where we would say performers, copyright owners, collecting indigenous communities must do the following, we left out the word author. So the proposal is here that the word author must be in, and then this first amendment is to it must also be correctly aligned so that you have them in the right order. And so we thought that does not harm. It makes the bill maybe read easier. So that is the first amendment then. In paragraph B, we had a bit of a concern about which section, and then we thought, but why are we limiting it to a specific section in Performance Protection Act? Because performance protection is actually now being expanded. And there might be a royalty in another section. So the proposal is, let us simply refer to the Performance Protection Act. It's quite clear where the royalties will be once you take that act and you read it. So rather delete it, and we don't limit it to one royalty, and then we create another royalty and we have to amend this act again. So that is what we are proposing there. On page 36, on a little bit towards the bottom of the page, subsection 7, Mr. Baloyi was saying, why are we calling it a representative collecting society? You know, we should just call it a collecting society. So that is what we are proposing there, to delete the word representative. We agree with him that already we have the CMOs that are overseas, and ours is a collecting society. Let's just call it one phrase and leave it at that. Then he pointed out that we are causing a bit of a paradox by saying a collecting society that, in terms of this chapter, who already exists. And you cannot have that. You cannot exist and be in terms of this chapter, because it's a new chapter. Yes. So his proposal is just delete in terms of this chapter. So a person who is acting as a collecting society must, within 18 months, apply to the commission. It does make sense. It reads much better. The next page, page 37, this is where we're adding the author. And also the other thing that we had was a collecting society of rights. So again, Mr. Baloyi was saying, no, there's another phrase that we're using now, collecting society. We must just call it collecting society. So we're proposing to delete the words of rights It is clear, it's defined in any event, it will make it very clear what they do. Then there's a little bit of a bigger insertion there in subsection 2, paragraph B. This is one of the things that are being advertised as well. So what we have here is we've added the obligation to keep records and report now to audiovisual, and it was with sound recordings. Mm-hmm. But what we're proposing here is that maybe it is not necessary yet to be an obligation for other works, but a collecting society should have the right to require people who have used the work to provide them with the necessary information. Because if the collecting society, because remember now it becomes a creature of statute, it cannot do what the Act does not allow it to do. So the collecting society phones exclusive books and says, I need your records on how many books you have sold for Mr. Harari's new book. And then exclusive book says, no, this is not your right to do, I'm not going to give it to you. And that would put them at a disadvantage. So the proposal here is to make it very clear that one of the things that they are allowed to do is to require a person to provide a complete, true, and accurate report of what those uses are. And we then actually, now I'll get to it a little bit later, we're actually making an offence. We're proposing that it become an offence for a person to fail to report as such. So the same as the obligation is on the sound recording, persons who use a sound recording or audiovisual work, to keep records and to report. If they do not do that, that is an offence. That is then copied here. The collecting society will not be the person committing the offence. It is the person who used and who fails to give the information to the collecting society that will be committing an offence. This is simply to give it a bit of teeth, because this is the crux of the collecting society. Without this information, they will not be able to operate. The next paragraph, Chair, is just to clarify that it's not just any fees, it's licensing fees. Paragraph D is what I've mentioned about authors and just using the phrase collecting societies. Paragraph D is also being advertised, and this was Mr. Baloyi who indicated that collecting societies do not just negotiate royalty rates. They also negotiate licensing fees and tariffs, and so that we propose that that be added there.
One moment. Honourable Williams, can you please take over the chair?
Thank you. We can continue, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. So if I can go then, this is then, on paragraph D, it is just that to add to what they can negotiate, because it is not just limited to royalty rates. It is broader than that. So that is the proposal there. The next amendment proposes on page 38, and it is, oh, it's someone drilling. It's on page 38, and it's subsection 4, and this is what, first let me go to paragraph C. One of the concerns was that the way that it was worded between a country and the Republic, that we might be interfering with your principle of national treatment. So the proposal is that rather than talking about country and the Republic, where you're talking about national figures, rather talk about collecting society and the foreign collecting society. So in other words, you're bringing the matter down into the persons who are dealing with it, rather than country to country where you might be affecting national treatment. Subsection 4 is in where I spoke about the offence. In other words, a person who uses and fails to report will then commit an offence. This is also being advertised at the moment. And the offence here copies exactly what the offence was for the obligation to keep a record. On page 39, the proposed amendment there is only dealing with the word author being added.
Just a moment, Honourable Taker.
I don't understand this thing anymore. It's confusing. Advocate, can you please explain? Here I see the performance again on the collecting society vis-a-vis page 18. What are the implications there? Because if at school you perform, there is another section I think it's omitted. On, I don't know whether it's omitted or removed or deleted. But can you talk to that clause vis-a-vis this one on this page?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, on page 18, what we did was is we removed the word performance of the work. In other words, when we are looking at users that copyright, the Copyright Act regulates, it should not be performing a work. That should be something in a separate act, in the Performance Protection Act, because it talks about users. When we look at collecting society, what we are doing here is like a tribunal. We are creating a tribunal and a collecting society in the Copyright Act, but it spans legislation. It will be applicable to other legislation as well. So here we specifically provide for performers because we in fact incorporate the Performance Protection Act. If I can refer you to where our collecting societies actually start, we say that a collecting society is on page 35, section 22B, subsection 2, speaks to a collecting society has been accredited to administer rights on behalf of authors or copyright owners in terms of this act, the Copyright Act, or B, performers or copyright owners in terms of the Performance Protection Act. So in this chapter, we specifically bring in the Performance Protection Act. And the reason for that is so that you don't have to duplicate this whole section in the Performance Protection Act, because it is something that can be provided for in the Copyright Act. So usage, we want to exclude performance, because you're talking about performances in your performance protection. But when we set up bodies like a collecting society, like the tribunal, it is in order to do it in one act, in this case the Copyright Act, and it then spans legislation. But we specifically say in this chapter that it spans legislation.
Yeah. I'm still confused, but we just have to remind me, and then we will discuss, because in either way, these acts we must align all of them, and they must speak to each other. If once this side, we have omitted this side, then the other one will opposite of the other one, then there will be a very serious unintended consequences that we are creating to the act. So we need to make sure that what we are saying on copyright and the performance, it talks similar, it protects those people. Because let's take that, who's that one? Trevor Noah is performing. What are we saying about that?
As you say, the critical point that you have underlined for us here, it is imperative that the acts are aligned, you know, and I think that's the principle. I wasn't here at the time. Honourable Mutlobo, did you just want to comment on that?
No, thanks, Chair. I think it, from a process point of view, if this work, the technical amendments have been concluded, it's just a reliance exercise again, that the team must just be able to use the fine comb and say whether the technical amendments or insertions made, they just bring consistency in the whole act. Secondly, in instances, for an example, where you insert a word like that is profound, like the one we highlighted, we'll just have to do some kind of double checking. But I'm happy that there is another process that we are already checking the constitutionality and others. But after this first take, let's have just to say, you know what, we've done double checking, and we are having a degree of comfort that our technical amendments have been properly effected, so that at least we don't wake up and say, oh, it just escaped us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Matlobo. Final comment on this section, Honourable Kachalia.
Thank you, Chair. The technical report, is that going to be made available, well, it should be, in full to the committee? I'd personally like to see it in full. I also believe that it should be made public, because I think stakeholders need to be fully in the loop of this. Also, you know, particularly to understand if there any proposed changes that are not merely technical, as it were, are there any that might affect policy or in terms of fair use and the like. I think this needs to be looked at carefully, so I'd encourage that to happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kachalia. If we can just, I do want to move, but Honourable MacPherson?
Yeah, I think it's critical to get the report of the technical team on whether there are still outstanding concerns that they have. So I think it would be prudent for this committee, if a report doesn't exist like that, to request the technical team to submit a final report to this committee on what they believe is still outstanding or still problematic.
I hear what you're saying, Honourable MacPherson, and I really am appealing to members if we can close now. Honourable Matlobo.
Well, Chair, there is nothing wrong to make reports available, but as long as we don't actually go backwards on matters the advocate has said have been concluded. The only issue is a principle to say, if there is a technical amendment, because it's more about ensuring that there are no gaps, the team must always be able to advise us whether this is material or not, because that's the main test, because the substance or the substantive issues, as we have said before, we had an ample time to engage with them, but let's be able to do that. But as long as the team, you go along the way, advise where you think a technical amendment, but you've been very clear, advocate, to say doesn't have any significant, but it's just issues to say, you know, it makes it a sound legal basis, because if sometimes the legislation is also vague, the applicability or even the dispute mechanism, whoever must be an arbiter, must not be able to second guess other things. I will agree, Chair.
As I say, we're just going through the report now, and these are pertinent issues. We've had one thing flagged so far, one issue. Advocate van der Merwe, it also gives you, Advocate van der Merwe, the opportunity to rest your voice, but do go ahead now.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. The next amendment on page 39 is just what I've explained about author being left out. And on the top of page 40, the same there, author being left out. The next big amendment in subsection 5 on page 40, this is where a proposal was made by Mr. Baloyi, and this is actually being advertised as well, that when the commission has to take over the administration of a collecting society, there should not be a discretion on whether the commission should appoint someone with skill. It should be a requirement that the commission must apply to the tribunal. So that is what the proposal here is doing. It is making it an obligation on the commission, and it then also sets out what skills will be required from this person. And like I said, this is also being amended, and we've presented on that before, so I will not go into too much detail on that. The next amendment on page 41, it starts at the bottom of page 40 by the deletion of paragraph A, but the explanation is on page 41. So what we are doing is I think it might be proposed that we delete paragraph B, because What we are deleting here in the bill is actually section 23, subsection 2, paragraph B, which is one of the distribution rights. It says that an act of infringement to sell, let, or by way of trade, offer or expose for sale or hire an article if to the knowledge of the infringer the making of that article constituted an infringement of the copyright. If we then repeal that section, because that is what the bill proposes, then we are actually removing that very critical distribution right. So what he proposes is that we must delete paragraph B and allow section 23.2b to remain on the statute book, to remain in the Act. And we have considered it, and we agree with his proposal. The bill incorrectly deletes subsection 2. It should not have deleted subsection 2. It's an important right that is being deleted here. So the proposal is that paragraph B be removed from the bill, so the section 23 subsection 2b remains on the statute book. The other... Lobo?
Someone says there's 60,000 classes here, you must disclose. Just so that I'm not lost. No? This thing that we should delete B, which B are we deleting? The one that starts, who tampers with any copyright management information?
Page 41B on its own. I think that's the one. It's just above the bold amendment. The deletion refers to, if we had kept it, it would refer to the deletion of subsection 2 of the Act.
Okay, no.
But we say no, the advocate
but
is saying...
We retain.
It would not be wise for us to delete the Act subsection 2. I also got lost there, I must admit, Honourable Advocate van der Merwe.
Maybe advocate should be able to say then if we import as it is in the Act, where do we put it then? Especially if you look at this amendment that... Chairperson, no, I'm reading page 40.
Uh-huh.
With 41, because remember it's subsection 26, ne?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, but the amendment that is being proposed is on 41, ne?
Yeah.
And then when I was listening to her, they said we did repeal that section in the main Act, and then they are of the view that main section should be retained, ne? I'm just asking for the purpose of this one. In terms of your technical amendment, where then does it find space in terms of what you are proposing?
Pretty straightforward, right?
Thank you, Jim. What will happen is in our bill, we will simply take it out. Remember that we are doing a redraft. So
okay.
We are allowed
yes.
to remove and amend without...
Yeah, this is just a draft.
We're making it very difficult for Mr. Herman because he'll have to be working through four... draft to see what was amended by this committee. But for this committee, it's very easy. We simply remove this sentence that
sure.
now deleted there in blue. We will simply take it out of our bill, and that means that the affected subsection will remain in the Act. As around the table when we sat, we also had a large discussion about what exactly is being deleted where, because you're talking
glad
about
that
a deletion
you were
for deletion.
Equally befuddled. Right, but it's confusing sometimes, but we're moving, and it shows that this technical team has been very helpful, and I see that you managed to get two women on board, huh? Right.
I can confirm now I'm okay.
Right. Are we now
someone
on page 42?
Someone has reduced the value of the classes now. There are eight.
Okay, we're still on page 41. I just want to take us just back once. The paragraph B, in which is now clause 26, and we are inserting into subsection 1 of section 23 a paragraph B and C. There, it was just that we need to clarify what information are we talking about, and it must be copyright management information, just to clarify. And then it was also pointed out that you can't have an independent cause of action that is instituted independently. So the proposal was to delete the word independent. Chair, the next amendment is then on page 42. And this is also a technical where we, in paragraph B, there, have indicated in any case other than those, and it should be other than that, because it's only one instance contemplated in that paragraph. So it is quite just a technical one. Then at the bottom there, going over on page 43, Mr. Baloyi proposed that we delete under all transactions, and rather use the words in respect of all users. And he was saying that that is more the terminology that the Act uses. In other words, the Act talks about usage, not transactions. So that we rather use the word users, in respect of all users. The next amendment is then in clause 28. And this is one of the things that have been advertised. In fact, it's one of the clauses where the committee, in fact, it's a flagged clause, even though it is being advertised, where the committee was saying, but we're not certain whether this is, in fact, how it should read. So it is being advertised, but it will be discussed once we have the comments back. What it affects is if a copy of a work is made outside the Republic, the question was, if it is made illegally in that country, should you be allowed to import it into South Africa? And we, at first we said, well, if it was made legally in that country, even though that would have been illegal in South Africa, you should be able to import it. But that opened importing. It would have been too broad, because you might open a loophole where a country is not a signatory of the treaties. And then the proposal was to say, well, at least if it is made with the authority of the copyright owner, then you bypass a lot of the loophole. But this is being advertised, so I think it is, and it is a flagged one already. So it definitely will be discussed quite intensively at that stage.
Van der Merwe, you know, earlier you spoke about users, and user. Exactly what are we talking about now? Is it the user, the person?
The only word, I might have pronounced it incorrectly, but the only word that we're using is use, users. We don't use user at all in the book.
You're not referring to the person. Good. No, that, I want you to just clarify that. Thank you.
Chair, the next amendment on page 45 is right at the bottom of page 45. And the comment that we have here is from Ms. Woods. And it was saying that she would propose that we take the words in the course of business out, because that might go broader than what the treaties allow for. And she would also include the words or communicate to the public a word. In other words, she was saying that we should not have in the course of business, that goes broader than the treaty, but we are not dealing with the words with the right to communicate, and that should be added. So this is just to bring this paragraph in alignment with the treaty. And then, Chair, we go to page 47, and that is just a technical matter. It is just a missing word there at the top. It is the member who has a matter in subsection 7 at the top there, the member who has a matter pending. Yeah. Chair, and then we very luckily skip a number of pages. And we go actually to, no, there weren't any comments from anyone in the technical panel, which to us means that they were satisfied with the content thereof. We are in fact going to page 61, so the very last page of the actual bill, and this is also just a technicality. What we are doing here, what we're proposing is in clause 37 in subsection 2, is to say, instead of stating until the commencement of the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, to specifically state section 1, because the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act might come into operation in phases, and we are specifically talking here about the definition section, section one. And Chair, those are then the technical amendments that, so we've addressed those comments from the technical panel. The things that are outstanding is then, as I started by saying, the concerns about constitutionality and the hybrid model and the three-step test. And in respect of the hybrid model and the three-step test, there we are expecting advice from Professor Skonvetter. And from in respect of constitutionality, I have done my own homework, but we're also waiting for an opinion from the legal advisors from trade and industry. Those are the only two things that are outstanding. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Let's just clarity.
We flagged one issue. Another issue, I think, raised specifically by yourself, Honourable Tierko, is just ensure, let's ensure that both of these bills are in alignment when they come through as drafts. Do you remember the issue you raised? And then, is that not correct, Honourable Tierko?
Thanks, Chair. Yes, it's correct. Remember, we have this approach of an hybrid, and that page 18 speaks to fair use. So we don't want to find ourselves the other side when we finalize this thing. Now things have been removed, then we don't want to see that thing. That's why I'm advising them, go and fix it if it has been removed by a mistake or what, so that when we come and deal with the matter, there's no asking where is this section, where it disappeared to and how.
Yes, I noted that Advocate van der Merwe communicated that, is it Mr. Skonvetter, is it, would be, Professor, that's it, would be speaking specifically on this. Is that it?
Yes, he will speak to fair use and the three-step test. And then in respect of copyright and performers, we are actually this afternoon, the team will be sitting on performers and make sure.
The other issue that was raised by the Honourable Kachalia, if I'm not mistaken, about a report. And in fact, the Honourable Matlobo, you were, as I understand it, you were concurring. Just let's go over that again, because I want to refresh my memory on the report itself that you were referring to, Honourable Kachalia, and then Honourable Matlobo.
Thank you, Chair. My understanding is that the technical team produced a report. Some of the purely technical amendments have been incorporated and spoken to by the advocate today. However, there are a number, presumably, of non-technical inputs which refer to policy and content. And I said that the committee would like to have, I believe, should have sight of the entire report, and I believe that that report should be made public so that stakeholders can have sight of the entire report.
Well, actually, that is for the committee itself, because it is our technical team, per se. We're seeking advice as to how to even pursue and understand and comprehend what the stakeholders have already said to us and communicated. Honourable Matlobo?
Chair, my understanding is that the technical team belongs to us. They were doing technical work to ensure that our work meets certain standard. They were not redefining policy. Because immediately you venture into policy, Comrade Chair, we are reopening the process that we have gone through it. Therefore, if the other members of the committee, they want those notes to be shared with, in the main, what we have received is the report itself. But if members want to satisfy themselves whether the technical team or the team led by advocate did consider anything, there is no harm making it available. But let's not be able then to introduce certain things that are not part of our process. The only thing that I requested from the team, it's only one, is the matter that has been flagged, the word written. because I just wanted to have some degree of certainty that these technical amendments, especially with respect to the one that I picked up, they are not materially that they are changing the context of the things that we've rehashed and rehashed over time. But while I'm still on the floor, we need to commend them. They've done a good job, done a very good job, and we should be able to look forward to the remaining part that we've tasked them to do around the hybrid, how does it look like, and the impact, and then lastly, the constitutionality. Because at least I think the process, Chair, through your leadership is very sound that we need to be able to follow, because we'll have to conclude this process, and it's a process that people have been looking up to for quite some time.
No, thank you, Honourable Ms. Lawbor, and I think that all of us at this point in time, accepting that we haven't you haven't completed the process, you know, accepting that, we nevertheless do extend our appreciation for the work done so far. Right, Honourable MacPherson, sorry.
Thank you, Advocate. I just want to, on page 36.
No, I'm not an advocate yet.
I'm speaking to the advocate.
Yeah, but you said thanks. I was the one talking.
Oh, all right. Well, you got a promotion then. Advocate, with respect to page 36, 4C, I just want to understand where in law we are able to prescribe or determine who the Commission may or may not accredit in terms of the BEE Act.
Thinking, Advocate Van, yeah.
Gee, if I may request to defer that question and just make sure of my answer. I understand the question. In other words, if the Commission is a creature of statute, do we allow the Commission somewhere this type of authority? So if we may also come back on that question.
No, I think we will accept that, won't we? Honourable MacPherson, we accept that. Let's get that back. Honourable Tierko had her hand up some time ago. Thank you.
Thanks. I think Advocate has outlined that, said they will meet in the afternoon and address that issue that I've raised. I'm happy with the response so far, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Tierko. And we do appreciate you continuing to keep sharp focus here, you know, notwithstanding, yes, subcommittee disbanded at this point, but nevertheless, the work of the subcommittee continues to inform this process. Let us not forget that. So we don't forget that issue. Yes, Honourable Ms. Lawbor.
Well, Chair, it's fine that Honourable MacPherson probably would like some explanation, but we should know accreditation, there are a number of accreditation authorities in terms of empowering legislation. And this one is so clear that this commission that is referred to in this act will never assume the responsibility of other authorities empowered by other enabling legislation to issue certain certificates that are in their competence, especially if you look at the BEE1 and the Companies Act. There are those authorities that they need to do. And if you want your accreditation to go through and to be accepted, you need to be able to bring these necessary documents like you will bring from other organizations that are empowered in law.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ms. Lawbor. Honourable MacPherson, still on the same issue?
Thank you. I'm not sure that the Honourable Ms. Lawbor understood what I said. What I'm asking is, does a creature of statute like this have the ability to reject someone's application on the basis of BEE status or not? And I don't believe that the BEE Act allows for that, to be honest.
We have already accepted that the advocate will return to us after she has effectively studied the issue. Not so. So we are coming back to that. Now, with the flagged issue, what I would like members to do is to themselves, in their parties or whatever, is to really unpack that for themselves so that when we come back tomorrow, we are better informed and we have a sound position in our respective parties as to where we want to take this. All right, so it's flagged. I would hope the flag may be raised tomorrow, but that does depend on individual members. On other issues, we've already given a position and a way forward on that. And if we look at the program here in respect of the Copyright Amendment Bill, and we see this is the 16th here. We move to performers. Do we see that? Performers. We then remember those clauses that were advertised. Come back, is that right, on the 25th. There weren't many, you will recall, very few. So if we can crack this, it's purely just, I'm not handing it out at this moment because we still need to address some of the clashes, etc. But I'm just briefing you there. You know, certainly we then get the national gambling issue coming up, but the challenge we face here, different, you know, players here, role players in the the national amendment sort of thing, copyright amendment bill, have different ideas of the process and where we are. And I mean that as not individual political parties now, but I mean the committee is one role player here. Then we've got the advocate and the legal team. Then we've got the department, you know, etc. So when we look and hear what they're saying, it did seem to me that they all had a different idea of when we hoped to complete this. And the word is hoped. I can't say we will complete this on this date. Can't guarantee that. But certainly the intention had definitely been that this is done by the 14th, 15th of November. That was the intention. But like I say, and I wouldn't like to be misquoted, we are not trying to dictate our deliberations, but it's just an idea of what we're looking at. And the point being, we would certainly like to see it in the House, in the National Assembly, in the last week of November. That was really the idea that informed that deadline. All right. I'm waiting for Ms. Sheldon, I believe she's doing a sprint. So can we please have a 3-minute comfort break? It is an hour, 10 to 12. Please, I really would like to make a start at 5 to 12. All right?